Next case is Miles v. Astrew.
May it please the Court, Your Honors. Barry Schultz on behalf of the plaintiff, Carolyn Miles. In this disability case, the vocational expert testified that if given the limitations that the ALJ found to sedentary, unskilled, or undetailed work, if in addition Ms. Miles had even a slight limitation in her ability to use her hands, that all jobs would be precluded. In addition, the vocational expert testified that if Ms. Miles needed to lie down during the day due to fatigue from her diabetes, that all jobs would be precluded. The administrative law judge failed to discuss either of those limitations in his decision. Social Security ruling 96-8P, under a section called Narrative Discussion Requirements, specifically states that the RFC assessment must include a discussion of why reported symptom-related limitations or restrictions can or cannot reasonably be accepted as consistent with the medical and other evidence. So the ALJ was mandated by the ruling to discuss those alleged limitations. The error is particularly important as to the use of the hands, because it was the ALJ himself who asked the vocational expert whether a slight limitation in the use of the hands would cause any difficulties for this claimant in working. Then when the vocational expert testified in the affirmative that, in fact, it would exclude all jobs, the ALJ then ignores that testimony in his decision and doesn't explain why he's rejecting any limitations in the use of the hands.
But what was the doctor's testimony on the use of hands? If he asked the VE that, what's the evidence there about the use of hands?
Well, there's evidence that the plaintiff was diagnosed with peripheral neuropathy, numbness and tingling in the fingers and the feet, but in this case in the fingers. There's evidence in the treating doctor's notes that she complained of those symptoms. There's actually no testimony about the use of her hands. There's testimony that she suffers the numbness and tingling in her hands, but in a form that Ms. Miles filled out, which she was required to fill out by the administration, she gave a detailed explanation of problems she had using her hands in terms of opening jars, filing papers, turning pages of a newspaper, dressing herself, and, for example, buttoning and zipping her clothes, things like that. ALJ doesn't discuss that evidence.
Well, what did the VE go into as far as sedentary work, as far as jobs that she could do? Or did he or she? I'm just looking at it from the standpoint, obviously she has to lie down, she can't work, that's one thing.
The vocational expert said is that when you're at the unskilled sedentary level, that those jobs require using your hands all the time, so that even a slight limitation, when the ALJ quantified this as 1/6 of the workday, an inability to use the hands for even 1/6 of the workday, and the vocational expert said that would eliminate all sedentary, unskilled jobs because they all require use of the hands for the whole day, wouldn't even allow that minor restriction.
So what should he have done? Followed up with a question about, well, what can she do or something like that?
Well, no, at that point, with that limitation, the vocational expert said there were no jobs for this claimant.
Well, is that implicit that that was the limitation? I guess I'm perplexed there because that seems to be kind of pivotal. If she can't do anything, according to the VE,
right,
based on she can't use her hands, then I guess that it's the end of it. But the ALJ didn't get there. So where did
the... Well, the ALJ doesn't discuss that limitation. He limits the claimant to unskilled sedentary work, doesn't discuss whether or not he's finding she has any limitations with her hands, ignores that testimony by the vocational expert, and then finds the claimant not disabled.
What should happen on remand then?
Well, ALJ will have to address the evidence in the case, the testimony, the forms the claimant filled out, and decide whether or not he's finding that there, in fact, is a slight limitation in the use of the hands. And if there is, then he would have to find the claimant disabled. I think this Court has held in at least four cases, Golombuski, Lopez, Dolly Smith versus Barnhart cases, as well as Heron versus Shalala, that where there's some evidence of a hand problem, in Heron it was only sparse evidence, in Lopez there was just a little evidence, but where there is evidence of a hand problem, that the ALJ has to address, and there's an impairment that could cause it, the ALJ has to at least address the evidence in his decision, and he failed to do that in this case. Additionally, the The ALJ's decision actually is inconsistent, and again, talking about that logical bridge between the evidence and his conclusion, because the ALJ finds that based on Ms. Miles' diabetes, which is her only impairment, that she's so limited that she can't stand and walk more than 2 hours out of an 8-hour workday. But yet then he doesn't address her testimony that she needs to lie down during the day. Now, maybe the ALJ would find that there was some reason why the evidence doesn't support that limitation, while it does support that she can't be on her feet for more than 2 hours a day. But he doesn't tell us, he doesn't explain why he rejected that testimony. And his decision is unusual because on the one hand, he finds these quite severe limitations based on the claimant's diabetes. But then at the same time, the decision reads as if he's finding the claimant doesn't have very severe limitations. But in order to build that logical bridge from the evidence to his conclusion, the ALJ needed to look at what are the alleged limitations and why am I going to find that this claimant can only lift 10 pounds on an occasional basis and can only stand and walk for 2 hours in an 8-hour workday, but I'm not going to find that she needs to lie down, as she testified, because of fatigue. There has to be some basis in the record for the ALJ to make a distinction between alleged limitations. But in this case, the ALJ made no distinction. He didn't explain himself. Additionally, the ALJ rejected the opinions of the state agency doctors. Those doctors found that diabetes wasn't a severe impairment. The ALJ said, no, I don't agree with that. I think the evidence shows it causes significant limitations. He then rejected the opinion of Dr. Goldschmidt, a treating doctor. But Dr. Goldschmidt did give just a conclusory opinion stating that the claimant was unable to work. Now, the ALJ speculated that the doctor maybe was just saying the claimant couldn't do her past work as a nurse's assistant, or that he was only giving his opinion based on her condition at the time of her urinary tract infection. But Dr. Goldschmidt doesn't say either of those things. And according to Social Security ruling 96-5P, it states, quote, the rules require that we make every reasonable effort to recontact such sources, treating sources, for clarification when they provide issues on opinions on issues reserved to the commissioners, and the basis for such opinions are not clear to us. So since the ALJ made clear that Dr. Goldschmidt's opinion wasn't clear to him for the basis for it, he should have recontacted the doctor. And then finally, there's also an opinion by Dr. Sims. And Dr. Sims said that Ms. Miles would have good days and bad days. And as the commissioner acknowledges, on bad days, Dr. Sims basically said Ms. Miles could not engage in any activity. And on good days, she could do light work. Now, the ALJ recognized that he, meaning the ALJ, found limitations more restrictive than Dr. Sims found, at least for the good days. But then the ALJ erroneously found that Dr. Sims didn't provide any limitations for the claimant on bad days. But as I said in the commissioner's brief, he acknowledges that Dr. Sims basically says Ms. Miles could not engage in any activities on bad days, and in fact said that she would be markedly limited in her ability to sustain persistence at work without an unreasonable number and length of rest periods, which is consistent with the plaintiff's testimony. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Counsel.
May it please the Court. Edward Kristoff on behalf of Commissioner Astru. The District Court properly found that substantial evidence supported the ALJ's decision in this case. The ALJ reasonably found that although Ms. Miles was significantly limited by diabetes, she did not have the debilitating limitations that she claimed. The record contains little medical evidence other than notes documenting her elevated blood sugar levels, the medications that she was prescribed, and her subjective complaints. As the ALJ noted in his decision, all in all, there is not much evidence here. Now, despite the lack of evidence, the ALJ expressly stated he was giving Ms. Miles the great benefit of the doubt and restricted her to a limited range of sedentary work. And in reaching this finding, the ALJ considered her treatment history. He considered the opinions of the treating and examining physicians. He looked at the consistency of her complaints over the course of the approximately 2 years she alleged she had been disabled. and he looked at her daily activities. And the ALJ explained his reasoning with enough specificity that this court can be assured that the ALJ considered all the important evidence and to permit the court to follow the ALJ's reasoning. Now, touching briefly on some of the specific limitations that Ms. Miles claimed, the ALJ expressly acknowledged that she complained of neuropathy-like symptoms. But at the same time, the ALJ also noted that there simply was no medical evidence of neuropathy. While the appellant says that the ALJ didn't discuss this impairment at all, the ALJ specifically discussed at least three medical reports that referenced the lack of medical findings supporting her claims of neuropathy-like symptoms. The ALJ discussed the opinion of Dr. Kale, who in June of 2005 indicated that she had unimpaired hand grasp and grip, normal arm and reflex strength. The ALJ expressly discussed the opinion of Dr. Lovinger in August of 2006 that she was neurologically non-focal despite her complaints of fatigue and muscle weakness for 3 weeks. The ALJ specifically discussed the December 2006 report from a physician who is difficult to identify. It's a handwritten report that while she complained of tingling in her hands and feet, no objective abnormalities could be found. The ALJ specifically discussed her complaints of tingling and numbness in her hands and feet, and he noted that the evidence didn't support her claims. Although Ms. Miles' doctors sent her to a specialist, a podiatrist, to investigate her claims of tingling in her feet, the podiatrist found only toenail fungus. Although her doctors sent her to an ophthalmologist to investigate her claims of vision impairments, that ophthalmologist found only pink eye. Her doctors did not send her to a neurologist, which reasonably suggests they didn't find her to have significant neurological problems, as she claimed. Now, Ms. Miles claimed that one of the main reasons she couldn't work was that she had a problem with frequent urination. The ALJ had a little slip of the facts here. The ALJ said that there was no evidence she had complained of frequent urination after the urinary tract infection that she had right at about the beginning of the time she alleges she was disabled. The ALJ's mistake was understandable because the only contemporaneous complaint of urinary frequency is in a handwritten report. It's difficult to decipher even when you're looking at it. The other instance was not a contemporaneous complaint of frequent urination. It was a report of a history of frequent urination problems. So at most, we have here two instances in approximately a two-year period where Ms. Miles is reporting frequent urination to her doctors. And it was entirely reasonable for the ALJ to note that it seemed inconsistent for someone to say they were unable to work because of frequent urination and yet to only mention it twice to her doctors in 2 years. Now, with regard to Ms. Miles' complaints of fatigue, the ALJ reasonably weighed the dramatic and debilitating complaints that she made against the almost total lack of evidence that she presented. She reasonably found that she could do a limited range of sedentary work. The appellant says that the ALJ could have done more, could have better explained how he reached that conclusion, how he weighed out the dramatic complaints against the lack of evidence to find that she was limited to sedentary work. The ALJ explained it very simply. He said, I'm giving her the great benefit of the doubt. And that should be enough given the lack of evidence in this case. While some people with diabetes may be disabled, the ALJ reasonably found that this claimant wasn't. Her doctors didn't find her condition to be so debilitating or poorly controlled that she needed insulin. They didn't find her condition to be so debilitating or poorly controlled that they would send her to an appropriate specialist, an endocrinologist. Her doctors didn't see a need to treat her diabetes aggressively. And given the fact that she, on several occasions, failed to follow their instructions, she apparently didn't see a need to treat her diabetes aggressively. There were no emergency room visits, and the notes of her doctor visits indicate she received only routine care. The ALJ reasonably weighed the evidence. He weighed the medical evidence. He weighed her testimony. He considered the opinions of the state agency physicians who found that she had no severe impairment, and he rejected those, saying that there was something here. But he couldn't accept the opinion of Dr. Goldschmidt because, as the appellant said, it was a conclusory opinion. The ALJ can't accept a conclusory opinion, even if it's from a treating physician. Now, the appellant says that the ALJ should have recontacted Dr. Goldschmidt if he thought that his opinion was unclear. Well, his opinion was unclear as to whether he meant that she couldn't return to her past work or couldn't work at all, but it was not unclear as to the basis for that opinion. The basis for the opinion was her subjective complaints. He said, you can't work because of your symptoms, the symptoms that she complained of. And as this court has stated several times, a claimant's subjective complaints cannot be the basis for a finding of disability. The ALJ also found that he couldn't accept Dr. Sims' opinion because Dr. Sims indicated that Ms. Miles had good days and bad days, and on bad days, she was so debilitated that she couldn't even sit for a single hour in an 8-hour day. There was simply no evidence anywhere in this record that Ms. Miles had a history of good and bad days. There was no evidence that she could not at least sit for an hour during the course of an 8-hour day. In light of the total lack of medical substantiation for Dr. Sims' opinion, it was reasonable for the ALJ to reject that opinion. For these reasons, we would ask the court to affirm the ALJ's decision.
Now, there's one thing. Maybe the question to the VE as far as lying down and use of the hands. The ALJ did say that he thought that she had a severe impairment. Is that right?
Absolutely.
And so given those two conditions, you're saying there, the evidence isn't there that she had to lie down frequently. You know, we already know about your position on the urination frequency, but also about the use of the hands.
Yes, the ALJ asked the vocational expert if she had such dramatic limitations with her hands that she couldn't even use them a sixth of a day, and the VE said no, she couldn't do any jobs because of that. But the ALJ, again, specifically addressed those allegations regarding the hand limitations and noted that there was no medical documentation for them. Therefore, it was entirely appropriate for the ALJ to decline to include such limitations in his RFC finding and in the hypothetical that he relied on in accepting the vocational expert's opinion.
We're both lying down in.
And with regard to fatigue as well, Your Honor, there was no credible evidence supporting her claims regarding the need to lie down throughout the day. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. How much time?
1.5 minutes. Your Honors, there's no requirement in the law that a claimant's symptoms be objectively verifiable. What's required is that there be an underlying impairment which can cause symptoms. A person might have arthritis that causes them severe pain. The pain doesn't have to be objectively verifiable. Ms. Miles' diabetes, that was uncontrolled with at least 22 references to elevated blood sugar levels in the file, provides the objective evidence for her diabetes, which fatigue and neuropathy are symptoms of diabetes. And
I understood your opponent to say she was not diagnosed with neuropathy, but
that's incorrect. Her treating doctors diagnosed her with neuropathy and, in fact, prescribed Lyrica, which is a medication that was specifically developed for the treatment of neuropathy symptoms in a diabetic claimant patient. In terms of the failure to follow instructions, there was one time where it was mentioned that the claimant didn't check her blood, wasn't checking her blood sugar. There was one time in about 3 years' worth of medical records. Well, when a claimant's blood sugar levels are consistently elevated, whether they're checking them or not, the fact that for some unknown period of time she doesn't check the blood sugar levels doesn't impact on the severity of her diabetes. And again, the commissioner argues why he thinks that the claimant didn't need to lie down or the evidence didn't support it. But the ALJ doesn't discuss that issue at all, and he should have. Again, thank you, Your Honor.
Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.